You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and friend, it's the end of an era, as defined by Monica as a significant period of time. That's a Friends reference because even after 4 years of making the show, some things don't or shouldn't change. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. So this episode might come as a shock, or it may not. Either way, it's here and you're listening to it. So how about I stop guessing what emotion it might bring and just let it bring it? So my guest today is my husband, Jesse. The last you heard from him was almost 100 episodes ago in number 109 when we were just about to get married. Aw, spoiler, we did it. Woohoo! But today's episode isn't about a big leap into a new relationship I'm taking. Rather, it's about a big leap out of an old relationship I'm making. A leap out of this here podcast. But it's not the end. It's ta-da. Because in the coming months, I'll be reshaping it into something new and more truly reflective of my journey and as of present-day passions. So rather than spark noting this chat, I'm just going to let my husband pull it all out of me in this here convo. Hey, Jesse.
Hi.
For anyone listening who hasn't met you, who are you?
I am your husband.
Great. And
that's
I have
all that exists without me.
That's your in your Instagram bio, Talia's husband.
Yes.
That's it.
That's no, my self-identity.
Stop it. We're sitting here with two beautiful golden turmeric lattes, which I secretly put a pump of lion's mane mushroom into. So our brains would be lit this morning. So clunky cheers to this.
It's delish.
Delish. Made with almond milk and a little bit of liquid stevia, which you usually hate, but I think in liquid form, you dig it.
I think that it's about moderation. I think you probably didn't put that much, and that's why I'm not really getting it. But when there's a ton of stevia in something, it tastes very sour to me.
Yeah,
but
bitter.
This does not. Mm-hmm. This is good.
Everything in life is moderation, babes.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what's not moderate?
What?
My moods.
Yeah. Oh, good segue.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do this for a living. So that's what we're going to talk about today, actually. How we recently discovered that my moods weren't just a quirky, challenging thing about me. They were actually something diagnosable.
Yeah. And then I think that it would be good to put that into the bigger picture that maybe people who aren't super close to you haven't been witness to. And that's, you know, like kind of the journey you've been on in the last year or 2 years and what you've been
slash also like 16 years
slash long time slash been, you know, trying to figure out moving forward who you want to be and how you're going to do it. And I think that you've made a ton of progress towards those goals in the last few months since shit has been going down. And I think that it's time to share more about it with your people.
Yes. And we are sharing one microphone. So we're leaning in. So hopefully the sound is as good as it normally is. Yeah. But we are very intimate right now.
I hope this is an appropriate distance because I don't think we could get much closer.
I mean, I'm usually like this and then you know.
Well, then our noses would be bumping.
That would be weird for the whole time. Okay. So I don't even know really where to begin. I guess I'll start with it all started. The way that I really think this started, let me say started more, how about that, was I guess when I decided to go off birth control. I wouldn't say that's where I'm going to start right now. Because listeners actually know that because I had a podcast episode with Nicole Jardim. It was basically a coaching call helping her encourage me to go off birth control because it hadn't been making me feel good. And because you and I have been thinking maybe in the near future, we will try to knock me up. Mm-hmm. And so I just thought it would be time to go off the birth control. And so Nicole gave me the encouragement in that episode to just do it, rip that Band-Aid off, pull that NuvaRing out. And I did. And I was nervous because for the reason I went on it actually 10 years ago was because I would get really, really depressed around my period, like bedriddenly, kind of really dark thoughts. And so the doctors put me on the NuvaRing. I did that because I had IBS, so I didn't want to take an oral pill every day. My mom and I were concerned because she was helping me. I was like a child. We were scared to like put anything through my digestive system. So we chose the birth control that just popped on in, went right to the source, no problemo. And I'd been on it for 10 years. And it really had helped, I think, with the mood stuff. Well, I thought. Dun, dun, dun.
So you went off of it.
So I went off of it in July. And at first I felt amazing. Uh-huh. I thought everything was perfect. And Nicole had said that, you know, because a lot of the ailments that she helps people overcome with birth control, plants is, and you know, just exercise and a healthy lifestyle really alleviates most of the hormonal issues, I thought I was like golden. And at first I felt golden. I felt dazzling. I felt amazing. And we went on vacation. And towards the end of the vacation, I started to feel less than amazing. I started to cry all the time, every day. And then we came back from vacation and I was crying every day.
I agree. And I feel like by that point, I was both confused, not knowing what was wrong, but also sort of a little bit getting used to the idea that you go through what I consider to be like major emotional swings.
Mm. Well, I was busy looking for my next scapegoat. So, you know, for me, I always thought I was a sensitive person who would react to all the bad things. So if I had a fight with my sister, I would cry about it for months, like six of them. If I, you know, when I launched a book in a pandemic and it didn't go quite as planned, I cried. And so I've, you know, if it's a rainy day, if I have too many emails, you know, if I stub my toe,
But you were also really prone to things really lifting you up and getting you very, very excited.
You're saying this with 100% vision, with 2020 vision, I can't speak. But like,
what I was trying to say was that I think that I became aware of a pattern before you did. And I'm not saying that I knew what it was. I just thought Talia has big emotional swings. She's highly sensitive to good and bad things. And I think that each time that one of those things happened that put you into a very, very positive or very, very negative headspace, you viewed it as an isolated incident.
Well, that's really what happened, where I was crying after this vacation every single day and I was looking for my next scapegoat. And all I could think of is I'm sad because we're home from vacation. Of course I'm crying because we just finished my favorite vacation of the year and now I have 365 days until the next one. And of course I would cry every single day. And you were sort of like, you're always crying though, is what I remember you saying to me. And I said, no, I'm just sad about this. And you said, there's always something. And every time you cry, you don't remember that you cried before. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck with me as I started reflecting and it made me think that, you know, he's right. Like life just feels so much harder for me than I think it ought to. Like, I feel like all my energy, every morning my eyes open, first of all, there's just dread. And there's like, can I will myself into a more positive place today? And I felt like every ounce of energy was going to meditating, tapping, positive thinking, forcing myself to try to not cry every day. And it was kind of like, maybe life's just too hard. Maybe there's something wrong. So,
and it wasn't that way forever. This was something that you had been falling more and more into in the last year or two, maybe.
Well, I thought it was because we moved and we had a basement flood. And then I had a family issue with my sister. And then my book came out and it wasn't what I expected. And the world was on fire. And, you know, the pandemic. And then I thought it was all that.
Yeah.
which, so then I decided what could I do? So I went to a nurse practitioner who was also a gynecologist, and I basically got a checkup because I hadn't since going off the birth control. And I asked, when she said, "How are you doing?" I said, "Well, I've been feeling a little down. I think it's probably because I went off birth control and, maybe that changed things. So could I get some Prozac just to take the week before my period as a gynecologist 10 years ago prescribed?" And she said, "I've never heard of that, just taking Prozac a la carte. It's not Advil." And I said, "Oh, well, okay. I was once prescribed Ativan. Could I get some of that?" And she's like, "Well, that's for anxiety." And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Well, are you anxious or depressed?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm anxious. Everyone says I'm such an anxious person. I mean, I'm anxious." And she started rattling off all the symptoms of anxiety. Obsessively like worrying thoughts. No, I didn't have that symptom. Trouble sleeping because your mind's racing and you're avoiding things that might trigger worry, all these things. And I checked zero boxes. And so she then says, "Well, what about depression?" And I'm like, "What?" And she starts listing every single symptom of depression. And one by one by one, I checked every single box. And when she got to the last one, which is suicidal ideation or thoughts of death, I said, "Yeah, of course. I mean, everyone wishes they could die from time to time, just vanish, or, thought if I disappear, no one will care. And maybe it would be easier to just vanish." And she had a mask on because it was COVID. And she looked at me and her whole face sank. And I knew in that moment, oh my God, I'm going to cry now. Oh my God, this thing I've been living with my entire life, this way of thinking, is what someone would call depression. I had no idea. I had absolutely no idea. I remember I just felt like I came out to you. You were sitting in the car outside the doctor's office, and I came out to you and I said, "I feel like someone just told me that my father was actually my adoptive father." Like, I felt that shaken. I had no clue that these thoughts that I've had since I can remember ever having thoughts of wanting to vanish and life just feeling so tough and so much shame and self loathing that I've had in my mind that I've been trying to fight with tapping and meditating and self-help books my whole life, I had no idea it would classify me as depressed. And that led to a appointment with a psychiatrist, which led to the really surprising diagnosis of bipolar 2. And in case anyone listening doesn't know what bipolar 2 is, because you and I didn't even really know what it was, I'm just going to read here. It's bipolar 2 disorder is a form of mental illness. It is similar to bipolar 1, with moods cycling between high and low over time. However, in bipolar 2 disorder, the up moods never reach full-blown mania. The less intense elevated moods in bipolar 2 disorder are called hypomanic episodes or hypomania. And most people with bipolar 2 disorder suffer more often from episodes of depression. And this is where the term manic depression comes from. It affects... Oh,
no, you can.
I just wanted to say it affects 2.5% of US adults, which is about 5 to 6 million.
Well, that's kind of related to what I was going to say. Who have been diagnosed with it. And that's, it was really news to me to learn that bipolar disorder, like, so many other things, has a spectrum. And I always had perceived it to be there's black and white. You're either sane or you're bipolar. And if you're bipolar, then you, stay up for a week on end scrubbing your bathroom floor with a toothbrush and then crash into a comatose state for the following week.
Yeah.
And, that's what the symptom of that disorder was. I had no idea that bipolar 2 existed and that it's as common as it is.
Yeah.
That looking up how many people we know, not personally, but like...
Well, let's just say Mariah Carey. Mm-hmm. Demi Lovato, Maria mm-hmm. Bamford, the comedian, Carrie Fisher, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah.
We know them all on a very personal level. In fact, they're going to came over for Thanksgiving, did our Zoom Thanksgiving.
So, once I did learn what bipolar 2 was, of course, everything just made perfect sense. And
you're telling me. It was, well, okay. Well, first I want to say the reason that this isn't spoken about that often was I looked this up. The DSM, which stands for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which is like this psychiatrist's rule book, they only added bipolar 2 disorder as its own entity in 1994, which is relatively very recently.
25, 26 years
ago. And in May 2013, they revised it. So they made their DSM-5, which, you know, kind of the updated
My
rule
mom
book.
Used to have all these.
Your mom was a
social worker.
So she had the big book at home. Do you remember seeing it?
Yeah, and she would always get excited when they would release a new one.
Really?
Yeah.
What would she do?
Just want to go buy it immediately. It was like an urgent thing that she had to get.
Oh. So May 2013 was when they released the fifth one. And they updated bipolar 2 in that one to fit more of the symptoms that I have, which I think is really interesting. They added it to reduce the duration of hypomanic state from 4 to 2 days. Before, they said that you classify as bipolar 2 if you're like blah, 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 for 4 days. But then they lessened it to only 2 days in a row. And then they allowed hypomania to be diagnosed without the manifestation of elevated mood, and that just increased energy and activity is sufficient. So they basically like de-intensified it.
Well, that's
a little bit. Going on your point of it being kind of a spectrum.
So this is who I've always known you to be. And I've always, you know, since we've met, been aware that like, and I loved it about you that you kind of have these three states. You have you in your calm, normal state, but then you get triggered into getting super, super excited about stuff or super, super emotional and sad about stuff. And that was, you know, just who you were. Highly sensitive, you know.
Well, that's what you would always say. I mean, everyone's always called me highly sensitive, and I knew that to be true. You're saying this now as if it's clear as day, that like you're acting like you could have just diagnosed me, you know, years ago. But we actually, when the psychiatrist suggested bipolar 2, I had a 1-hour appointment and she suggested that could be what's going on. And then we had another appointment scheduled 2 days later. You and I sat down and had a lot of conversations and reflecting about if there were three states, because that was really the thing that was in question here. Because I, at that point, after the gynecologist appointment that made me realize, oh, everything I've thought for my entire life actually is depression, I thought now I would get diagnosed as, you know, severely depressed, clinically depressed. So the key question was, are there two states, just Talia energetic and then Talia crashing into depression, or are there actually three states?
Yeah.
Is there the depression, the quote unquote normal or like stable? And then is there this hypomanic?
Well,
we really paid a lot of attention to try to figure this out.
And we knew that, you know, usually clinically depressed people have a hard time getting out of bed, let alone what you would do, which is oftentimes like spring out of bed in the morning and go for like a 6-mile, 8-mile run.
Right.
So, you know, we've heard enough depressed people talk about depression to know that that was a
That's why it never really
different
made me think I could be depressed at all.
Well, we knew that you would sink it. What I thought was, sometimes like something bad happens and then she gets like derailed and then, you know, falls into a state of extreme sadness for
but we never thought it was
a few
depression.
Days, a few weeks, whatever.
No one ever told me or asked me, are you depressed?
But you did always know something wasn't right about your emotional
100%.
State. 100%. Because you told me from the time that you were in high school and you were really into basketball, you were emotionally out of control when it came to basketball.
I thought that was my personality. I mean, what would happen is I would get obviously bursts of energy. Well, what would happen is if I missed a basketball shot, first of all, oftentimes I would start crying right then and there on the court and they would have to take me out of the game and like have me calm down.
Yeah.
And then, or if I messed up or someone stole the ball from me or something, I would then get like whoosh, it kind of triggered into like running down the court, sprinting and like whacking a girl. Like I would foul her as she was going up for a layup and I knew I would get called for a foul, but I didn't care. So I had these two very obvious states that were happening depending on the game. But I just thought
That was the other interesting thing I learned about bipolar too that I definitely did not know is that events and circumstances are what essentially start episodes, either positive
and
or
just
negative.
Life, I think.
Because I had always,
I think
that
it's chemistry and circumstances.
When you first told me the bipolar 2 diagnosis, I was like, well, that doesn't really add up because, you know, that's a chemical thing that's out of your control. And I know for a fact when we are doing something amazing, like, you know, traveling or something really, really positive happens that you're thrilled about, you're not going to be depressed that day. And I also know when something really, really terrible happens, like whatever, you're not going to be very, very uppity that day. That's not going to be a day that you go for an 8-mile run. Mm. So if events and circumstances seem correlated to your mood, that just means you're sensitive. That doesn't mean there's some chemical imbalance. And then
I probably never got help until.
And then what we learned was that with bipolar 2 people, it is events and circumstances that push them into one state or the other. And then it all made sense. So,
I mean, a lot of things then made sense. And I was going to say also that a few things that were also going on at the time that really helped bring this to light was I started working with this human design lady who's now a friend of our fam's, Nikki. And she's been on the podcast talking about the miracle, wonderment, interesting wizardry that is human design. And I thought that human design and talking to her about who I am at my core and how I'm wired really also just helped facilitate even deeper self-awareness. And I think that is what is so key here. And what I really want to share with listeners is the incredible life or death, really imminent value of self-awareness.
Well, that's been the biggest like gift of this whole thing is, again, you've struggled for so long with, you know, what we considered your sensitivity, and you hated it and you were always trying to change it. And I felt like you felt there was something wrong and I gotta fix it and I need to meditate more, or I need to work with more coaches, or
read
I need
more self-help books.
Read more self-help books or whatever practices, whether it's a sweat blanket or just, you know, whatever it is that someone tells you helps stabilize people's moods.
No, I never thought, oh, I need to stabilize my mood.
Well, whatever it
is
that people...
therapy talk. I never thought in that sense.
Right.
I thought, I'm broken. Fix me.
There
what fix me?
Something in you that what was like, I need to meditate more. I need to try to do
well,
more.
I knew something was fakacked.
Right.
I knew that something was off. Just, I knew it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't put words to it.
And I think,
and so I just tried to tap harder and meditate longer and affirm more. And it was just making it worse.
So I think that getting clarity after years of not understanding why your brain worked the way it did has taught you a lot and made you much, much more equipped to now get up and do the things that you've wanted to do for a really long time, but were too, you know, trapped in some kind of roller coaster to do.
Well, what's so crazy is that I think looking back, I hit a really bad bout of depression that lasted well over this past year.
Yeah. I mean, there were definitely like moments in there of like bursts of positivity, but for the most part.
Well, thankfully, I had things like Good Morning America to boost my positivity.
Yeah. No, you definitely were trending downwards as of late. Yeah.
I mean, from my recollection, it just kept getting worse and worse and harder. I look back on that period now and I'm like, I couldn't move. I mean, I remember there were so many days where I would just lie down in bed or on the couch. I couldn't move. Like, I feel it in my body right now. I just feel immobile. And that's how I felt in my mind. I couldn't think. And I remember one day I went to get Tommy dog food, and I had my mask on, and it was like a gloomy, yucky day, and I was just feeling terrible. And I thought it was XYZ, ABC, you know, 1, 2, 3. And I was buying the dog food, and they're like, "Are you a frequent member here at the dog food place? Do you have a card or whatever?" I'm like, "I don't think so." And they're like, "Oh, well, we can look you up. What's your zip code?" And I didn't know it. I couldn't remember it. I could not remember it. 5 digits. I couldn't find it in my brain. And I remember really freaking out because that was shocking. And I texted Sloan, my best friend from childhood, who's a neuropsychologist. And I asked her if forgetting my address could be a sign of like a brain tumor or something, because she works on brains. And she said not to panic and that maybe I'm just stressed or dehydrated or something. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I could be dehydrated. And then I started Googling if Bluetooth headphones, which I wear all the time, could affect my brain health and be making me forget things. Depression never crossed my mind.
Right.
I've been living with this my entire life, and depression never crossed my mind. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl, winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate Sharpwriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book. My first freaking real life will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book. Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100 plus plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. PartyInYourPlants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's partyinyourplants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP, because it gets all the thumbs ups.
Okay, so you have this self-awareness now. And what do you think that has done for you? And I mean, I think that anything also needs to be taken into context with the fact that you started getting medicated for this.
Oh, well, that's illness. Coming on. So,
yeah.
So that's what my therapist started telling me, was that she looks at bipolar as like the diabetes of the mind, where if you take medication the same way you take insulin, like you're good, you're better, and you can control it, is what I'm trying to say. You can manage it. And so I started on medication, you know, the day I got the official diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I also went out and got a library card while I was waiting for the prescription to be filled. And then also I dropped my wedding band down our sink and had a meltdown. So that was a rough day. I just will never forget all those events happening. But I started on medication, and I mean, what they say about these medications is absolutely correct. They don't change you. They help you be more you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that, coupled with just this radical self-acceptance, has been the greatest gifts I could ever have asked for. I mean, I've got self-love out the wazoo upon understanding this about myself. Like, because for so long, I felt so broken. I felt like it was up to me to exercise more willpower or learn new techniques or read a new self-help book to try to fix myself. And what I realized is that I'm not broken. I just have this thing. I'm just wired this way. I was born with this hand. These were the cards I was dealt.
Well, I think,
and yeah. I have words to explain who I've been my whole life. And it is so empowering.
Well, fortunately, two things happened simultaneously. You went from living this life where you spend, you know, if emotions range from 1 to 10, you went from living this life where you spent so much time living in either mostly 1 or 2 with occasional bursts of like 9 or 10.
And I would say
very little time at your 5. You went from living that way to now living mostly between, you know, 4 and 6, with a good day being 7 or 8 and a bad day being, you know, maybe 3 or something.
My therapist told me not to label things good or bad.
Okay.
Because she says that's imposing judgment. She says a high day and a low day, or an up day and a down day.
Okay, noted. So I think that that's been really fortunate that the medication has helped you by no means become, you know, a zombie, but just become a more stable version of you. And that has been happening simultaneously with you now coming to be able to love and embrace yourself rather than beat yourself up and say, God, I'm so fucked up. Why am I this way? I wish I could be that way. You know, you're now
I'm just able like, to, I just love myself to feel so much.
Some
I mean,
compassion. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And you can understand that the 9s and the 10s and the 1s and the 2s.
It's all me.
Yeah. And that's not something you should beat yourself up for.
No, it's how I was wired.
Right.
And it's so interesting because I texted my mom the other day because right after sharing this publicly on Mind Body Green and my newsletter and Instagram, I was feeling really good and everyone was being so kind and warm, and connection always gets me all lit up. So I was trending upwards, as having a high day. And I texted my mom and I said, I just feel so grateful that I have, you know, a psychiatrist, a therapist, a Jesse, a family, a support system, a friends, a medication, a language to help me now, because inevitably this high will come down to a low. And my mom said, oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry that you have to deal with this. And I said, no, you don't understand. I've been dealing with this my whole life. This has been my life. The high of a vacation always crashed into a depression. A high of a work opportunity always came down to a depression. I mean, even like a dinner, a double date that we would go on, and I would feel high because I'd be connecting. I'd be so chatty, and I would always come down after that depressed, wondering if I said too much, beating myself up, spiraling into I should just die and disappear. And to have the tools in place and the verbiage and the awareness, I don't mind that I have the highs and lows because I can handle it now, because I understand it now, and because I can love myself through it rather than blame myself for something that I couldn't be fixing.
So this is, you know, fortuitous timing in the sense that you have been wanting to expand the focus of your work, and you had already in the last year or two, you know, after publishing a cookbook, which really isn't a cookbook, you know, it's half about life and lifestyle and
stories
and all this stuff, you had been wanting to lean more and more in that direction. And you started writing and sharing stories in various places about life and strength and resilience and boldness.
Well,
and
I think this
levity
was kind of brewing inside of me without knowing. I knew there was something else that I was so passionate about, even more passionate about than plants.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, I guess, perfectly articulate why, or really, you know, in the same vein that whenever I talk about plants, I tell my story. I say, you know, I felt like shit forever. One day I had this aha moment with this smoothie, you know, in LA while interning for Happy Madison. It changed my life. I went back to school. Was that weirdo cracking open coconuts and blending her own almond milk while her peers were drinking box wine and doing keg stands. And I deactivated from all social life at Syracuse and became what I called a health nut hermit. And I never wanted anyone else to ever have to choose between their health and their happiness. And that's why I do what I do with Party with Wits. I didn't have that for why I really want to talk about other things.
Those were the...
But I knew it was inside me.
Those were the events and thoughts and everything that shaped your 20s and shaped what you spoke about and shared about and wanted to connect with people about in your 20s, because all that happened in your late teens, you know, 20, 21 mm-hmm. age, and you learned so much through your health journey and, you know, emotional isolation in college and mm-hmm. And that became the focus of your work in your 20s. And I think that what you've gone through in the last couple of years and now have been learning from that and how that connects into what you've already started writing talks about and sharing about, that's going to be, I think, the story of your 30s.
Yeah.
Because
a third of 30s.
Yeah. So,
well, bringing this back to human design for a hot sec, I am what is called a 6 and a 2 line. And the 6 line lives their life in 3 chunks. And the first chunk is from ages, Jesse's rolling his eyes as he does at my human design talk.
I didn't literally roll my eyes. You just read my energy.
So you're rolling your energy. Yeah. Excuse me. a 6 line lives their life in 3 phases. And the first phase is ages, you know, 0 to 30. Oh, funny timing there, buddy. And 30, age 0 to 30, you're supposed to be kind of experimenting and doing all the things that light you up and pique your interest and feel like passion. And then from 30, I think it's to 50 is the next phase, which is like you're living in the truth and the knowledge of your experiences. Mm-hmm. You're alchemizing. You're really... as Nikki says, like turning your shit into gold, turning yeah. what happened in those first 30 years into something. And I'm doing that, baby. So you, whether you're a human design skeptic or not, you can't deny it because you just said it. That's why I love human design, because it supports exactly
whatever
our reality
works for you
when we're living
is fine
in alignment.
With me. Okay. yeah, I think that this is very positive timing for you and your future. And so maybe you want to shed a little bit of light on the kinds of stuff you want to be. I mean, if you spent your 20s creating recipes for people and, you know, encouraging them to be social and vibrant with their wellness.
We eat more plants and then your life's as good as a party.
Right. What do you think, you know, you want to be sharing with people through the next decade?
Well, I realized that teaching people plant-based eating in a fun, humorous, lighthearted way was really not supposed to be my forever work. You know, it was part of my own story of what I call self-loyalty and living boldly. And practicing what I preach really means moving forward into this next stage of my truth. It means doing this next chapter of my life as self-loyally as possible. And that means that, you know, food is just one of the tools that I believe one can use to feel their best and live a bold, self-loyal life. And for me, like I said, part of my story is that I entered the kitchen out of necessity. When my body first got hooked on plants, the food I sought was not available. You know, I had to crack my own coconuts, dehydrate my own kale, cook my own food, make my own almond milk with my bare hands. And vegan ice cream was not available in grocery stores. And so, like, when I started Party My Plants 100 years ago, well, 7 years ago, matcha was not mainstream. I could not say on a podcast, hey, I'm drinking a golden latte and have anybody have any clue what the heck that meant. And now look at us. Like, we're collectively cruising through Burger King drive-through windows and ordering plant patties like it ain't no thing.
Yeah.
I mean, my point is that I gave plants 7 years of my life and I gave this podcast 4 years of my life. I mean, I have a full undergraduate college degree in my podcast.
Yeah.
In this Party My Plants podcast. I mean, I'm doing it for 4 years. We started it in November 2016.
It's a long time.
That's wild. And I've done it every week without, I mean, minus a few month periods where I took breaks or did reruns, or which I now realize was when I was in depressions. But now I'm really excited to give my life away from plants and into self-loyalty. Similar as I wanted to help people eat more fiber, I really want to help people find and stay loyal to themselves and to live their lives every day in a bold way that feels really true to them. Because I believe that eating is so important, but it's just part of one's overall journey into being self-loyal. And if your head's not working right, I'm bonking on my head right now, you can eat all the kale and the kraut in the world, but you still won't be happy. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's perfect because I've always talked about partying my plants. We've done the plants, and now it's about the mental party. Because if you have your health from eating all the plants, but you don't have your happiness, you have nothing. There's no point. Yeah. There's no freaking point. So the same as I did work to empower people to prioritize what they put in their bodies, I'm really so excited to help people healthify what they put into their minds. Mm. Because the more loving and self-accepting thoughts that we squish into our brains, the better we can live out in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And I feel like you've gotten a lot of lessons the hard way, but you've come out of them very enlightened.
Well, I'll say that partying in my plants, speaking of lessons, really taught me to tune into my body so I can choose food based on how it makes me feel. And then it showed me that everything makes me feel stuff. You know, we've talked here on the podcast so much about food and eating, but then we've also talked about movement and how our movement affects how we feel and our places of dwelling and our items. We've done podcast episodes on minimalism and organizing and getting rid of our crap and our clothes. We've talked about smells like essential oils and how those things make us feel. We've talked about our careers and how that makes us feel, and our thoughts and obviously how those impact us. Ultimately, everything makes us feel stuff. And I've learned that a key to life is that awareness. Noticing how things make us feel and aligning with things that make us feel energized.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you've also come up with some really good, I think, unique perspectives when it comes to living boldly and how that ties into being loyal to yourself, you know, kind of being a self-advocate. I think that,
like, don't let the wind blow you, blow yourself.
I think that's a wonderful tagline. Yes.
But what if people haven't heard about that yet? Let's summarize. So long story short, one day for my 30th birthday, I got a gift from my sister, and the gift was a pillow with the line, "Don't let the wind blow you, blow yourself," on the pillow. And it said Tali Pollock 2017. And apparently it was advice I had given my sister years back, because this was in 2019.
And it stuck with her enough that she made me a pillow with the quote on it.
Don't let the wind blow you, blow yourself. And when I saw that, I like got the wind knocked out of me, because I realized, oh my gosh, that's how I've lived my entire life.
Blowing yourself.
Blowing myself.
Yeah.
I'm not just sitting around. Like I blew myself into that doctor's office.
You've always been very assertive. Yeah.
Well, you have to. You can't just let the wind blow you, because you'll wind up somewhere willy-nilly. Yeah. Or you'll wind up somewhere you don't want to be.
Or you'll wind up not really going anywhere.
Totally.
Yeah.
Depending on the day and the wind. If there's not a lot of wind, you're not going anywhere. Depends on the weather. I think blowing yourself is what life is all about.
Yeah.
That's not forcing things. Is that what you're going to say?
Oh, no. I get what you're saying. Yeah.
That's not white knuckling your way through life. You know, like, I believe blowing yourself is attuning, is that a word? Aligning yourself with the wind at your back. So the wind, when it comes, like a sailboat, it propels you to where you want to go.
So you're like using the momentum that exists out in the ether to ride away.
Yes, but aligning. And that again comes back to the idea that everything makes us feel stuff. So if we keep aligning with the stuff that makes us feel good, when the wind comes, it'll blow us even more into where we want to be.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting is this is something that you were saying as of 2017.
Right.
But it ties exactly into what you're now saying you want to share with people about self-awareness.
Totally.
Because I think that, you know, the whole idea of self-loyalty, let's say, like, well, I think that being assertive and advocating for yourself and, you know, all that, you know, blowing yourself is absolutely a major component of, I think, what you would classify as self-loyalty.
Yeah. I mean, I think self-loyalty is like a more active version of authenticity. That's a buzzword that's trending around mm-hmm. like right now, like adaptogens.
Yeah.
I mean, I think living self-loyally is doing things to stay more loyal to yourself than to your fears or to what the influencers tell you you should do or should be or what your parents tell you you should do or should be or what society at large. Yeah. It's actively choosing these little moments of baby boldness, as I say, to stay more true, more loyal to yourself than to anything else.
I think that authenticity is a, I wouldn't say loaded, but that's a tough idea because I think that so many people struggle with identifying who they authentically are and they have all these outside influences. Every, you know, you spend 10 hours a day on your phone getting influenced.
Oh my God, I have something to say. I'm like raising my hand.
Okay.
I thought I was being authentic on my social media account and on my, in my business because I would show up, no makeup, be myself. But where was I when I got depressed? Now, granted, I was unable really to pick up my phone and
share with people.
Share because I was too zombie. I was literally too depressed. But I also really tried hard unconsciously to
hide that,
hide it slash force myself into, you know, more manic energy.
Yeah.
So my therapist was actually saying to me yesterday, I should have written it down here. I have it somewhere, that basically I've spent so probably all my life. Oh, this is what it was, fighting depression or forcing manic energy.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to show myself or the world. So I thought I was living authentically, but know what's authentic? Authentic is saying, which I do now, hey, Jesse, I'm so sorry. Or no, like perfect examples. Hey, Katie, I'm so sorry. Can we reschedule our Zoom coffee date? I'm having a low day.
Yeah.
Or hey, Leora, who I work with, I'm sorry, I just sent you 17 emails. I'm caffeinated and a little bit manic today. That's living authentically. That's being self-loyal because you're actually owning who you are.
Yeah. Well, again, there's these outside forces that persuade people into thinking who they authentically are.
Authentic is more really just like personal branding now.
Yeah, exactly. Your authentic identity is shaped by who you think you're supposed to be on Instagram or who people want to see you as. And you probably saw yourself
authentically
as a bubbly, playful, making puns.
Cutting my plants, girl, bitch.
Exactly. And any time that you weren't that person, then you weren't living as your authentic self. You were letting,
so I just beat myself up.
Yeah, you're letting negativity
take
over.
Where'd she go?
And
where was she? Where's the girl right now when I'm so depressed? When my book came out and I was depressed AF without knowing, I was in a horrible state of depression when my book launched. I kept looking at the cover and saying, where is that girl?
Yeah.
Where is she? Because I don't feel her in my body right now. Where is that girl?
Yeah.
And that all that did, instead of embracing my reality that, hey, sometimes I'm that girl, sometimes I'm depressed. I beat myself up.
Yeah,
and so I think authenticity causes us to do that. Self-loyalty does not. It lets us live loyal to ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, you have all these ideas. I think that you have so many stories to share with people that touch on these ideas. I think that you're really, really perceptive. And when things happen out in the world, even if it's like something that most people would not even blink at, or they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't take note of it as a moment that has something of significance there. I think that you're very observant. The way that you tell stories really connects with people. And I think that people are probably a little bit tired of having, you know, the wellness slash self-help slash social media at large world tell them that there's like steps to happiness.
And there's something wrong with them. And that
there's something wrong with them.
If they just eat ABC or do XYZ or buy 1, 2, 3, then they'll be blonde.
Yeah, I think that
fixed,
people
perfect,
are
perfect, healthy, well.
Yeah, and there's multi-billion dollar industries that exist around that false promise to people.
Totally.
So I think that people are starting to become aware of the fact that there's no four-step process to happiness and there's nothing you can buy to teach you to love yourself.
I think we just need to play the hands that we were dealt, and that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
Is we have, but we have to become aware of the cards in our hand.
Yeah.
We need to use that self-awareness to understand. Because for me, I think I had a card like hidden under my bed, like squished under my mattress in a pile of dust, this bipolar card. Like I was trying to play the hand I was dealt, but I was lacking this last card that using extreme self-awareness helped me uncover. Mm-hmm. And finding that card, I now get to live my life to the maximum. I get to play the hand that I was dealt to the best of my ability. And that is what I want to help people do. Not buy ABC or eat 1, 2, 3. I don't know why I'm using all this thing or whatever.
So how do you
play the hand you're dealt, baby?
How do you see yourself sharing these ideas? How do you want to connect with people moving forward?
Well, I think this is going to be the end of the Party in My Plants podcast. I think we're going to end on a high. As my friend Georgie says, end on your best day or something like that. I think it's been a wonderful 4 years, a whole college education degree. But I think we're moving on to different things. I think there's going to be lots of videos in my future. I think there's going to be tons of essays slash articles slash blogs slash written content. And I'm woke. I don't think that's the right use of the word. I am lit. I'm excited about voice memos. Uh-huh. I've been voice memoing people for months now, and I find it such an effective way to communicate. And I'm excited to voice memo my listeners.
Yeah. Well, how is that different from what you're doing here?
The podcast?
Yeah.
Well, that's been a lot of interviews about wellness topics, and I would say it's a little bit more polished and scripted.
The podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm
and also voice memo, I guess you can, if you have something to say that only takes 3 minutes to say it, you can do that. And if you want to talk for 45 minutes, you can do that.
Totally. Well, that's the other thing that, you know, learning I'm bipolar, the reason I actually saw Nikki in the first place to do human design was because I was so frustrated with what I called my consistency problem, which was I just felt like doing a weekly podcast or a weekly video or, you know, Instagram rewards consistency and business rewards consistency, but I felt like I wasn't consistent. And no matter what journal I bought or what system I implemented, I could not find this consistency. And I'm really excited to create, you know, sorry to land that plane. I realized the reason I couldn't find consistency is because I'm bipolar. And that by definition, we're not consistent. But what I am so stoked to do is create content on a system and a schedule that fits me, which is inconsistent.
Yeah.
And so if that's a 3-minute voice memo on a Monday, but then a 15-minute voice memo on a Thursday with a video or a blog post or an article or, you know, newsletter in between, that's what it is. But I just want to keep sharing my stuff in the most self-loyal ways.
And then ultimately, all this work that you're putting together, correct me if I'm wrong, is also going to be compiled and turned into a new book.
Yes.
Is that correct?
We are pitching it next week.
It's very exciting.
I don't count my chickens before they hatch.
Yeah.
But I'm blowing myself, baby. I'm aligned. Yeah. The wind's at my back. So we just got to see who wants to catch on to the
boat. Well, in the meantime, knowing that it takes,
you know, you don't even have a signed contract yet, let alone having written it, edit it, publish it.
We wrote the proposal.
Yeah.
45 pages, baby.
But, you know, that's...
And I have a TED Talk outline.
Yeah, you do have a TED Talk outline.
So we're pitching that too. So we got stuff. We got stuff.
A lot brewing. But some of it people are going to have to wait for. And that's what I was getting at. It's the book, yes. You know, that's year and a half till people have it in their hands. Best case scenario.
Probably 2 years.
So in the meantime, all these different things you want to share, you know, it's clear that you're not going to be consistent. That's fine. You're embracing that.
I love it.
But how do they track it all? Where are they going to get it?
I just hope that people understand what you just said, though, the importance of it, that I'm not going to be consistent and that's cool.
Yeah.
Because that's owning yourself.
Yeah.
And I just accept it. And that's where the self-love comes in. Understanding why I'm not wired to be consistent allows me to stop beating myself up about not being consistent. Whereas for years and 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 years, I've just berated myself with negative thoughts about why aren't you more consistent?
Yeah.
But now I'm like, oh, this is why. Great.
Yeah.
I own it.
Yeah.
So people should, the one thing that I can count on that I can promise is that if you go to TaliaPollock.com and my name is spelled, I'm sure you'll find links to it, but it's TaliaPollock, like the painter or the fish.com/hello. You can get on my newsletter list and that will be the best way to just stay in touch about every single thing.
Publish an article somewhere or put some kind of video content somewhere or have voice memos to blast out. Yes. It'll mostly be through emails.
Yes. That'll be the core. So well, TaliaPollock.com/hello.
Everyone got to get on that list then.
Yes.
Unless you want to wait a year and a half to 2 years for a book.
But then they still won't even, well, I guess they would stumble into a bookstore and find it there. Yeah, but how about we stay in touch till then, shall we?
I think that's a good idea.
Oh boy. Well, is there anything else that we want to say?
I love you and I'm proud of you.
Oh, thanks. That's not in my notes. I love you and I am grateful for you. And to my listeners, I love you and I am grateful for you. Thank you for listening for some of you for 4+ years. Some of you, what if this is your first episode? That's interesting. Welcome to the Party in My Plans podcast, where I make holy living as fun as a party. So, you know, you'll actually do it and then you'll actually live, look, and feel your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. Boom. And if you are new, then go back and listen. I have 4 years of heartfelt interviews.
And it's going to stay there.
Forever.
Yeah.
I don't know, forever. I'm sure forever. Right. I don't know what's going to happen to the podcast. It's not going anywhere. No, it's not going anywhere, friends. You can listen back to any episode at any time. They will live on. And it has been one of the greater pleasures of my life to do this podcast, to understand that you're listening to it with your kids. Sorry for the profanity sometimes. With while you're driving, while you're doing dishes, laundry, cooking, road trips with your husbands, fiancés, friends, sharing it with your mom. I cannot tell you enough how privileged I feel to have been streamed through your ear holes.
That's very nice.
Well, they're very nice.
They'll stick with you for the next 10
years.
Yeah,
I mean, for months I felt like ending this was tragic and I was cutting off a limb. I just feel like, all right, this is a project that came to a close. So, you know, Friends had to end.
Yeah, and you're not sailing off into
Jennifer
the sunset.
Jennifer Aniston does other things.
You're not going anywhere.
I'm not going.
You are going somewhere, actually. And it's going to be very exciting. And they'll be along for the ride for the next 10 years.
Friends, so. I honest to God think that if you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed any other episodes, if you enjoyed this podcast, what I have in store for you will rock your world. So please, 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 please stay with me. Go to TaliaPollock.com/hello to stay linked to me. And let's just keep this party going. Pull an all-nighter. Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast.
It has been the journey of all journeys to go on this ride with you. I thank you from the very bottom of my heart for giving me your most precious resource, your time, and for lending me your hopefully not too waxy ears to speak into all these hours over all these years. It has been one of the greatest honors of my career. If you have any ideas for what you might want to hear more of as I rethink how I want to continue podcasting in the future, email me at talia@partyinmyplants.com. And on partyinmyplants.com/final, you can also sign up for my newsletter, which is the best place to stay up to date with all my things. Of course, if you want the greatest thing to come out of this podcast, my book, stuffed to the brim with all the puns and healthy nuggets you've eaten up in this here show, my book, Party in Your Plants, is a thing that you can buy wherever books are sold. If the past 207 episodes, which will always stay available in iTunes and on my website, they're not going anywhere. If recording this podcast weekly for over 4 years has taught me anything, it's that my hypothesis about partying in our plants was bingo, bango, bongo, right on the money. I pretty much tested it with every wellness expert under the sun, and the results are in that not white knuckling your kale is essential, whether it's for your skin's health, your brain's health, your gut's health, your muscles' health, your teeth's health, your libido's health, your small body because you're a kid's health, in which case go ask your mom to explain a libido to you. I didn't mention in this episode with Jesse though, but another reason that I feel the Pimp Podcast is ready to be kaput is that we get it already, don't we? No need to beat a dead horseradish any longer. In fact, I said it in episode number 1 of this podcast when I said our greatest health and happiness comes from eating way more plants than we do crap. And the only way to guarantee that we'll actually eat the plants is to take the hell out of healthy, which I think we did mighty well in this era of the Pimp Podcast. So with that, I say, eat your plants with a smile, monitor your mental health with a loose grip, love and blow yourself, and I will catch you in my new projects. So stay in the loop with me at taliapollock.com/hello so I can tell you all about them. I love you. I'm grateful for you. I'm excited for you. And goodbye.